Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hey, Dog Nation, I'm Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and if you're watching on video, you can tell I am broadcasting from home here again today, enjoying the comfort of the holiday season. I hope many of you are doing the same thing. We'll have a busy show. Connor Riley coming up a little bit. A lot to talk to Connor about today. Also transition to Georgia's regular season home finale on Saturday against the Vanderbilt Commodores, a game that I'm really looking forward to for a number of reasons, primarily related to the Georgia senior class, some of which we know will definitely be playing, or at least we assume will definitely be playing their final game, some that might be playing their final game between the hedges. But this is a class worth honoring, and over the course of the next few days here on Dog Nation Daily, we will certainly take some time to do just that, give them the respect they are due. I want to begin today's show by talking about this, though. If you ask a Georgia fan what's the one thing that he wants or she wants more than anything else, obviously the answer to that is a national championship. I always think it's funny when opposing fans troll Georgia fans for having not won a national championship in 40 years, as if Georgia fans themselves are somehow unaware of that, or if Georgia fans themselves somehow block that out and don't pay attention to that. It's UGA fans themselves who are the most keenly aware of what the program has done, hasn't done in recent years, how close that it's been, but ultimately not quite getting over the hump. It's Georgia fans themselves who have that catalog of memories right at their disposal very quick. They don't need opposing fans to tell them about that. Georgia fans want a national championship. And I'm right there, you know, with them. I got an ornament on my tree somewhere behind me, that talks about, you know, the desire to see Georgia win a national championship. But I think we can also say this, that even though the individual goal of winning a national championship is that prize that UGA fans want to reach for, want to experience, want to know what that feels like, I'm actually not quite so sure that that's the highest plane of achievement in college football. Now, you need to win a national championship, but just the trophy alone, I don't know necessarily has as much cachet as something else that college football provides you the chance to experience. Case in point for this, look at Auburn. Auburn won a national championship in 2010. You can't take that away from them, although maybe the NCAA should have, but ultimately, you can't take it away from them. It existed. It happened. It's real. Yet, when was the last time you saw an Auburn fan bragging about the 2010 national championship? I mean this literally. It seems to me that Auburn fans, for the most part, have stopped talking about their own national championship, even though it has come within, you know, the last decade, at least for now. It's come in the last decade. I think the reasons why Auburn fans have kind of grown silent on discussing that is, for the most part, Auburn fans are now more interested in what's happened for the program since then. Yes, they did win an SEC in 2013 and Gus Malzahn's first year, but most of the years since that 2010 national championship have actually been years of disappointment, Auburn not being as good as Auburn fans think they should be. And for Auburn fans, that lack of maintaining a status as a consistent competitor, as a consistent national championship contender, has probably been more top of mind and maybe more relevant to them than what happened when Cam Newton was still here and when Gene Chizik was the coach of the Tigers. Another example that kind of proves this point. Let's say that you weren't a fan of Georgia. Let's say that you were shopping for a team to cheer for. Who would be a more enjoyable experience to choose? If Georgia wasn't available, you had to choose someone else. Either be an LSU fan or you could be an Alabama fan. Let's just use those two schools as a comparison here just for a moment. I think conventional wisdom for people who are not really plugged in college football, they might say, well, you want to ride the LSU train. That's the defending national champion after all. But I think college football fans who are a little more plugged in and paying a little more close attention, I think they'd probably look at the situation in Alabama. Even though Bama lost the SEC West last year, lost head-to-head to LSU, I think Alabama has established itself as having a sense of permanence, showing up year over year, putting themselves in the conversation that LSU can't maintain. I mean, based on the results you're seeing in 2020, based on some of the recruiting stuff you're seeing here for the class of 2021, what so far has LSU gotten out of its 2019 national championship? The quarterback who led them to that is gone. The passing game coordinator who led them to that is gone. so many of the players that played in that game have in that season have kind of moved on. I'm not belittling the accomplishment of winning a national championship. It happened and it mattered, but I'm not quite so sure it matters as much as what Alabama has figured out a way to do, which is show up and be a contender year after year after year. And even though last year Alabama was losing to LSU and Ed Orgeron was bragging once that game was done and losing head-to-head to Auburn, in the quiet moments around all of that, it seems like, and I listen, it pains me to say this because I don't like Alabama very much, but it seems like Alabama was finding a way to hold its program together. They didn't have a bunch of opt-outs at the end of the season. They didn't have a lot of guys who weren't projected as first-round picks move on to the NFL draft. They seemed to care about their bowl game against Michigan. And it appeared that they laid a foundation that has enabled some of the 2020 success they are currently enjoying. Now, here's where Georgia comes in on all of this. Against Michigan. I think the same thing here that they drew for Georgia. And please don't hear me to say that it's okay that Georgia's not going to win a championship this year or the goals that Georgia had in place at the beginning of the season don't actually matter. Please don't hear me saying that. I'm not in any way suggesting that the goals that Georgia aspired to at the beginning of the season are somehow less relevant than they were. They were real. They do matter. And Georgia's not achieving them. But college football, and I'm going to use a fancier phrase than I probably should here for a moment, college football is not a finite game. Once the championship of a season is decided, it doesn't they come do to an matter, end. And Georgia's season not finale. That's not the end of everything. College football is more of an infinite game where year after year after year, you're either doing things that contribute more to future success or doing things that contribute less to future success. LSU, for instance, winning the 2019 national championship is not just an accomplished goal in that year. Theoretically, it's also the kind of feat that should make future success more possible. There are all kinds of moments like that where you can either make your future success easier to achieve or more difficult to achieve. And so that's why I think Georgia, as it moves through the rest of the season, that's why the games that it has been playing the last couple of weeks have mattered to me, even though Mississippi State's not very good and South Carolina's not only not very good, even worse now than they were at the beginning of the season because of the opt-outs they've had and the fact that their head coach is no longer there. And to a degree, that's also true for Georgia's opponent this upcoming Saturday, Vanderbilt. Now, I'm not going to work too hard to sell a game that many of you know is one in which Georgia is the heavy favorite against a completely overmatched foe. But there are things that Georgia will do in this game on Saturday, assuming it continues to play the way that it has the last couple of weeks, and will also be doing in practice far away from the watchful eye of you, me, or anyone else who cares about Georgia football. There are things that are going on right now that I believe that can contribute to Georgia's success in 2021 and for many years to come. Let me give you a couple of examples of this. I thought yesterday, Georgia defensive lineman Trayvon Walker, who I think is one of the most talented players pound for pound on this Georgia roster, Trayvon had a chance to talk about what's not happening at Georgia in comparison to what is happening a lot of other places in college football, where guys, for their own reasons, some of them good, some of them valid, some of them maybe a little more selfish, but for whatever reason, guys are choosing not to finish off their season. They're choosing to opt out. They're choosing to think about themselves, their own future, and to put college football in their rearview mirror. Now, for whatever reason, Georgia hasn't had a lot of that so far this season. And yesterday, the Georgia defensive lineman, Trayvon Walker, took a moment to discuss why. Here's Trayvon.
I mean, every player may have their own reason of opting out, but here at the University of Georgia, we're doing very good staying away from COVID, at least trying to. And I just think that the team as a whole, we have a bond that can't be broken. It's more than it's a brotherhood, but at the end of the day, we went through a lot together and we really just want to finish it out together.
It has been said that Georgia right now is playing for pride. And in some ways, that seems like a hollow description of what college football is supposed to be, because obviously Georgia started the season playing for what we would have perceived as a lot more than pride. But I think when you listen to Trayvon Walker there, who is so well-spoken and has such dignity in the words that he uses, I think you hear him speak and you realize that playing for pride is not necessarily a insignificant thing. And as I've said before, the pride in which Georgia's playing now, to use Trayvon's own phrase, the brotherhood this team is choosing to maintain with each other, I think does lay a foundation for success that can be more easily achieved by guys like Trayvon, who will be here in 2021, or by guys who maybe aren't here yet or will be in bigger roles next season that are about to have the baton passed to them by this year's senior class. For what it's worth, Georgia coach Kirby Smart was even more poignant on this topic when he spoke yesterday. Here is Kirby.
I mean, to me, in life, you're not going to be able to opt out of that. You got to go out and compete and work and challenge yourself. And that's what these kids have done. They've done it for each other. They've stuck together. They've done a really good job thus far of maintaining the social distance, keeping them washing hands, and not having major issues thus far in our organization. And I appreciate the guys that have done that and the people that have helped them. But the senior class has been the glue to that. They work really hard each day. And, you know, I think they want to leave a legacy of being the winningest senior class to ever come out of here. And that's a feather they want to stick in their hat. They got it to do that. They've got to finish this thing off right.
I think one of the things that Kirby Smart says there is undeniably true. The players that choose to stick it out in football during tough times will be better for that over the long run. The players who've done the right thing to make sure that thus far, Georgia's been able to play most of its games, and the game that it has missed up at this point in time was not missed because of anything that we know of on the Georgia side. I think the players that have contributed to that will also be better for that in the long run too. But admittedly, I'm a little selfish, and I'm obviously a big Georgia fan, and I'm proud of the way that Georgia played this past Saturday against South Carolina, even if the opponent itself was pretty overmatched. And I felt the same way for the most part against Mississippi State, even though that game was a little closer than the experts thought it should be. And when you look ahead to this upcoming Saturday against Vanderbilt too, then I'm also expecting Georgia to once again show up, equate itself well as it plays for pride and lays that foundation for what could be success in the future. I'm not going to tell you the Vanderbilt game matters more than it does. It only matters so much. But the degree to which it does matter, I think, could make the more meaningful games to come in future seasons a lot easier to win. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and we're glad to have you with us, whether it be on video, as I'm broadcasting here from home, or radio podcast. And I know the audio experience is made a little bit different by me not being in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studio. So listen, I just appreciate all of you and your cooperation on that. We're looking forward to being back in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios again very, very soon. Let me give a quick shout out to my friends at ESOG. You know, I'm at home right now. Many of you have been working at home for a long time. And when you do work at home, I think one of the things that comes up are things you notice that you wouldn't otherwise see if you weren't spending as much time inside your own four walls. And when you think about ESOG, you think about, you know, water creeping in, you damp space, you know, water spots, you know, things that are showing up. And you know, last night we had some rain. And for some of you, you do see that water creeping into your basement. You do see that creeping into your garage, crawl space, areas like that. You notice that water intrusion. And obviously that's one of the things that Engineered Solutions of Georgia can help you protect against. Also foundation issues as well. If you're walking around, you see that horizontal crack show up, maybe over Thanksgiving, your crazy uncle pointed that out to you. Well, listen, you've already known it. You know that that's something you need to get fixed. And so my advice to you is to reach out to my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia today and let them do the great work for you to get that done. They're proud partners of UGA, makes them great to do business with, really fun. They're also good friends of ours here at Dog Nation Daily as well, and very easy to get in touch with. It's 678-ESOG now. You'll dial that number. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. It's 678-ESOG now. They've got two full-time engineers on staff, and they'll take really good care of you. And it's really nice to have Engineered Solutions of Georgia as a part of Dog Nation Daily here today. I'm going to get Connor Riley coming up in just a moment. One of the things we're going to talk to Connor a good bit about today is the announced retirement of Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarry. Before I get some thoughts from Connor on that, though, let me also address some of that with you here as we go around the doghouse today, delivered by my friends at Marco's Pizza. And I'm really kind of fascinated by two things in relationship to the announcement that McGarry is set to retire as Georgia Athletic Director. I'm thinking back years ago, when we first started this show a little bit more than 5 years ago, I would say that Greg McGarry was a pretty hot topic around Georgia football at that time. And one of the things I think I've seen over the course of the last few years is McGarry be a little less of a hot topic. I would say, just casually speaking, that he's become a little bit less famous now than he might have been when Mark Richt was still coach here and, you know, a few years ago. And I don't think that situation necessarily is just unique to Georgia. I think overall, college administrators, athletic directors are just a little bit less famous than they would have been in the past. When Georgia's athletic director was Damon Evans, everybody seemed to know who he was. Now, Damon got into a little bit of trouble that caused his Georgia tenure to come to an end, but Evans was kind of already famous before that. Obviously, Vince Dooley was a legendary former coach, and for a while, that was the picture of what athletic directors kind of were. But now, in 2020, you know, Philip Fulmer seems to still fit that mode for Tennessee, but for the most part, other athletic directors just aren't very famous. For instance, who's the athletic director at LSU? Maybe you know, but that's not a person that you see on TV very much. How about Texas A&M? Maybe you know about Ross Bjork, but once again, that's not the kind of person that's a hot quote or a big interview or the kind of person you see sort of splattered all over your TV screen. Gary Barta is the current college football playoff committee chairman. I believe he's the AD in Iowa. But ultimately, how famous is even a guy like that, even though he's got this really big job? For the most part, athletic directors have just kind of gotten less famous. I think McGarry, over the course of his tenure at Georgia, has also kind of adopted a lower profile in keeping with the way a lot of this is also working out around the rest of college football. So I say all of that to say this, that whomever Georgia hires for this job, I would expect that person to ultimately be a little less talked about in future years than maybe some of us who've grown up around college sports have discussed athletic directors. The big reason why for that is that I think that the main thing that an athletic director does, which is make sure the bank accounts are full and the donor pipeline is flowing the way it's supposed to be, that has kind of become a little bit of a quiet business. That's not loud. That's not noisy. I think a lot of the people who have been very well known as boosters around the SEC, in some cases, I think they've kind of regretted some of the attention they've gotten. So for the most part, big time boosters are now a little more comfortable to wield their power behind the scenes in kind of a quiet fashion. And the way in which that money is coaxed out of those guys, I think also, and I guess presumably gals too, is also done in kind of a quiet fashion. So Georgia's gonna have a very interesting search. There's some internal candidates that are getting some attention. There may be some external candidates get discussed too. But ultimately, I don't know how high profile the future of the Georgia athletic director position is going to be, given the fact that around the rest of college football, this has become more of a behind closed doors administrative type role than has become public facing, front of the house, you know, mouthpiece for the institution type role. And I would guess that the next Georgia AD probably kind of fits into that topic a little bit as well. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. You know, Marco's is America's most beloved pizza. It's real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. And you can get yours today baked in a 450-degree oven and then delivered contactless, touchless to you after that. We all care about health and safety right now, and Marco's Pizza obviously does a good job for you on that. There's also some great specialty pizzas. You've heard us talk about those, the White Cheesy or the Deluxe, the Garden, the All Meat. You can enjoy any of those large specialty pizzas right now. It's just $13.99 for a large specialty pizza at Marco's Pizza. So make sure you check that out, marcos.com or the Marco's app, and you can enjoy that today as Marco's Pizza delivers Around the Doghouse to us here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let me go ahead and bring in Connor Riley on this topic right now as we broadcast our show live from the confines of my own home right now. Connor, we're just talking about the retirement of Greg McGarry, Georgia Athletic Director. When you think about McGarry, when you think about his legacy, and maybe even more important to me, the future of that position here at Georgia, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
It's football. I think the defining moment of McGarry's tenure is his decision to move on from Mark Richt and bring in Kirby Smart and really usher in a whole new era here at Georgia. You look at some of the buildings that have gone or will have gone up in recent years. You look at the indoor practice facility. You look at the West End Zone project. You look at the standalone football facility. All those are sort of geared towards football. Now, there have been some other things. I know they rebuilt the tennis courts, and they've made some updates to Stegman Coliseum as well. But I think his decision to move – McGarry's decision to move on from Mark Richt to Kirby Smart and sort of go all in on football has really set the tone for what this Georgia athletics program is right now. And I'm interested to see who they hire here, because I think that could say a lot about where they want to go in the direction of this future.
I'm a big believer that the future of ADs, both at Georgia and around the rest of college football, is a lot less famous and high profile of a person than these jobs have been in the past. Use Florida as a for instance on this. You know, when I was kind of coming of age as a big time college football, a college sports observer in general, Jeremy Foley, the Florida athletic director, has a huge profile and everybody seemingly knew who he was. I don't think that Scott Strickland has nearly the same profile in that same job right now. Dan Radakovich at Clemson, all the names you want to mention. Mm-hmm. I would just suggest that these are less famous people than they used to be. This is more of an administrative job now than it is, hey, mouthpiece of the organization type thing. Do you foresee the next Georgia AD also kind of sliding into a role that's just a lot less public facing, maybe fewer interviews and fewer message board topics and podcast type topics, where the AD is just not the lightning rod for discussion the way that maybe in some cases it would have been in the past?
Yeah, in the past, I think you've seen some schools. Tennessee's obviously an outlier, and I know you touched on that earlier, but, you know, Tom Osborne was the athletic director at Nebraska. Vince Dooley was the athletic director at Georgia. That sort of used to be the old way of doing it, where you'd bring in a well-respected coach or someone who was sort of known within the fan base for giving what they had done on the athletic field. That's really not the case anymore. I know Ray Tanner was a former baseball coach, and I believe Mississippi State's AD was a baseball coach as well. But these are more business-type people, or people who have business-type backgrounds. I think, you know, if Josh Brooks is the guy, I would say he's the leading internal candidate. He is going to be the interim. He's a guy not much is known about. He does. I would venture to guess most people couldn't point him out on the Dog Nation audience right now. So I think it's a business person type of these backroom deals, not so much those forward, front-facing former head coaches that used to run these jobs.
Let me do one more thing on this, and admittedly, this is a little bit of a boring topic, but I do think it matters. That's why I'm bringing it up, that when you talk about Greg McGarrity's legacy, you talked about money that was leaving the bank account to go make purchases for indoor facilities, for things like that. That's the kind of thing that you and I will give attention to, the money coming out of the accounts and going to make the campus look more impressive, to contribute to winning. And that obviously gets a lot of attention, but it's the flow of money into the accounts, which is, I think, the really the most important job that an AD has. Can you get donors to separate themselves from their wallets and put money into the pipeline and into the coffers? And that's really the most important job of the next AD. And Connor, I think that there's actually some real challenges associated with that. I think the tax laws maybe not quite as favorable to donations the way that they used to be, although I'm not a tax expert. I think that, you know, a lot of folks have dug deep to contribute to Georgia the last few years, and now asking them to do that again is also, you know, kind of a challenge. As I said before, I know this is kind of a boring topic, but this is what the next AD is going to face, is how do you keep the pipeline of donations flowing, you know, given the fact of over the last few years, it seems like this program across the board athletically has raised a good bit of money.
Yeah, Greg McGarrity has never really been all that popular with the Georgia fan base, but I think you also have to recognize he was good at his job. He brought in money. He built new facilities here. He sort of kept winning traditions going. I know he hasn't always hired the best coaches in some other non-revenue sports, and basketball with Tom Crean isn't looking fantastic right now, but it's still early there. You know, and this will be the first and probably last Bernie Sanders reference on this show, but there's the meme of Bernie, "I am asking for your donations once more." I think that's what whoever is going to be the next athletic director sort of needs to do to start off right now in college athletics. And while, yes, Georgia is just finishing up a lot of different projects, there are still projects that need to be done. I know baseball wants to make some more renovations. I'm sure at some point something will be done about Stegman Coliseum, since it is sort of behind the times. And certainly you look at a place like Ole Miss, where they just completely redid their basketball facility there. As much as has been done, especially with regards to football, if you don't have cranes going up and construction projects going on, you're falling behind when it comes to college athletics. And I think Greg McGarrity, certainly in his later years, did a very good job of keeping Georgia up with the Joneses.
Since you brought the topic up, I guess I'll mention this. You know, by definition, a priority means ranking things in terms of a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And in college sports, obviously football is so much more, at least to our audience, more important than the other sports. Do you have to make that choice if you're the AD of saying, do I want to be a football AD that's football first and then everything else next? Or can Georgia pursue the kind of, facilities arms race that seems to be going on in this league in baseball and contribute to basketball without taking something away that the football program probably needs? How much of a decision-making process does that priority decision require?
That's to me the ultimate question. And I think who they hire here is going to say a lot about what that sort of intention is. If they hire Josh Brooks, I expect that to be a sort of football first hire. Given Brooks has extensive background in football, he helped set up the Notre Dame series. He was actually on the Louisiana Monroe staff, I believe, as the director of football ops back in 2007 when they beat Alabama. So he's sort of his bread has been buttered with football. Whereas I think the leading external candidate, Carla Williams, she's up in Virginia right now. That's sort of a more, hey, we're gonna rise the tides for all boats here, for all ships here, and bring in someone who, yes, obviously football will always be first here at Georgia, but I think someone who also has an eye, or at least multiple eyes, on keeping up those other big programs.
This may only be confusing to me, but there are two Joshes in Georgia administration. There's Josh Lee, who works side by side with Kirby Smart, and there's Josh Brooks, who's in this job. So sometimes that can be kind of confusing to me, but I will kind of point that out to other people that sometimes when you hear Josh mentioned around Georgia football, you're hearing Josh Lee, who works closely with Kirby Smart. But on the topic of the guy that you brought up, Josh Brooks, here's the one thing I'll say about him, that to the extent that I know anything about him at all, and I've seen a couple of interviews with him, including on Dog Nation a couple of months ago, he seems to be a fan-friendly college administrator. For instance, I think he's been given credit for making Sanford Stadium look nicer. They've hung some of those retro banners, you know, throughout the concourses and things like that. I think Sanford Stadium looks nicer than it used to. It's kind of a little more appealing to Georgia fans. I think Brooks gets some credit for that. The Notre Dame series that he's been given some credit for is also kind of a fan-friendly step. I don't know that the weight of my endorsement carries much, but one of the things I do like about a guy like Brooks is, you know, even though a lot of what he'd be doing is behind closed doors, he at least seems to get the fan friendly part of that. And that's probably a pretty good first step if you want to be Georgia AD, that he would be, for the most part, aware of fan opinion and appealing to most fans, I would think.
Yeah. From my understanding this year, I know not everyone has been happy with the fan situation at Sanford Stadium, just given what we have to deal with in a pandemic. But I think certainly looking around the country, Georgia's done as good of a job as anyone in terms of getting fans in the stands, having them safely distanced, creating a safe environment in the stands. And Georgia, I think, made it a point for Brooks to sort of be the point guy on that. And you sort of know what we've heard rumblings about McGarity in the past, that maybe he was on his way out, he was retiring sooner than this. I certainly believe if the pandemic hadn't hit, maybe he retires in June when his contract was initially up. And I think they have sort of been preparing Brooks for this role, or at least on an interim basis.
Let me bring you in on the topic we're kind of discussing before you came here, which is what's going to happen on the field on Saturday. I don't want to oversell this, but I've enjoyed the Mississippi State game. It was closer than it was supposed to be, but there were a lot of really, really entertaining elements to that. I was really entertained by what I saw from Georgia against South Carolina on Saturday. And I guess big picture in both these games, leading into an even more overmatched opponent, it would appear, this upcoming Saturday, is the fact that Georgia seems to be maintaining its edge here. And Georgia seems to be very interested in finishing strong. And the idea of we're going to play for pride, even though our end of season goals have now been kind of left in tatters, that doesn't seem to be an empty statement by Georgia. They seem to be, at least for right now, another presumably two games remaining in the regular season, mm-hmm. to prove this one way or another, and maybe a bowl game after that. But they seem to be kind of making good on that promise right now, and I'm really kind of enjoying what I'm seeing, and I expect to continue against Vanderbilt on Saturday. What's your outlook for the game?
Yeah, the thing we talked about a few weeks ago after the Florida loss was, okay, so where does Georgia go from here? We look back at what Florida did last year after that Georgia game. They were blowing teams out, and then they play in a New Year's Six Bowl. It's not the Sugar Bowl, but they go down in the Orange Bowl, and sure, it's a lesser opponent, Virginia. And they win that game rather comfortably. I believe Virginia covered on a last-second play there that I'm still pretty upset about, but that's neither here nor there. But you look at what they did. They took care of business. They went to their bowl game. They showed up. They played well in that game. Kyle Trask had a big game that day, and it sort of set the tone for what we've seen from Florida here in this 2020 season. Can Georgia do that this year? Can, so far, they've checked the boxes. Mississippi State, JT Daniels has come out and looked really good, looked really comfortable throwing the ball. Last week against South Carolina, they got the run game going. Ideally, I'd probably like to see a little bit more balance. Mike Griffith actually pointed this out. Go look up the stats for when Alabama threw only 16 passes or Clemson only threw 16 passes. Clemson's been in plenty of blowouts against big-name teams, but they're still getting Trevor Lawrence reps, especially in his freshman and sophomore years there. So I would like to ideally see a little bit more balance against Vanderbilt, but also – you're running the ball for 7 yards a carry. It's hard to also criticize Kirby Smart for just saying, hey, we're just going to run the ball here, take our yardage. And the other thing was they were still creating explosive plays on offense.
Yeah.
Defense, I don't care that much about what we see from them for the rest of the year because I know there's going to be quite a bit of turnover this offseason. And really, we're not going to know a whole lot about this defense going into next year. I assume it'll still be good. But the biggest thing for me is offense, especially because – Daniels comes back, there's a really good chance you have a lot of continuity where, you know, depending on their decisions as Zamir White and James Cook, you might possibly bring back 8, 9, maybe even 10 starters there on that side of the ball.
Here's what I'll say in response to all of that. I know it's tempting to want to compare Georgia to Clemson or Alabama. Those are the teams that we would say that Georgia's chasing, but I think it's actually more appropriate to compare Georgia to itself. Connor, this was the biggest margin of victory for Georgia in an SEC game since Florida in 2017. And I think that matters, even though South Carolina was obviously very depleted. This is the first time since October of last year that Georgia scored more than 30 points in consecutive games against SEC opponents. There was a pretty good span of time between the SEC opponents back in 2019. But, you know, to be multiple 30-plus point games, you know, back-to-back weeks, I think is also something that matters here, that it is obvious to me that Georgia seems to be getting better. Now, simultaneous to that, it's also obvious that where Georgia needs to go to be at the very elite level of the country, there's still a lot of ground to be made up, and I'm not going to sugarcoat that. That is what it is. But the process of getting better week over week against Mississippi State and South Carolina, I don't think you have to look very hard to find some evidence that this team is getting better. And I really don't have a bad thing to say about the way that Georgia played against South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 45-16 win. They're up 28-10 at halftime. First drive, JT Daniels comes out, looks good, hooks up with Trey McKitty twice for two big plays there. And then James Cook and Zamir White sort of get going in the running game. Looking ahead at their schedule, obviously Vanderbilt, they're a five-touchdown favorite. I don't know if I'm going to pick them to cover in that, but they should win this game easily. But
they have covered in three of their last four, to the extent that matters.
I will say that Missouri game looks a lot more interesting now than when it was originally scheduled on November 14th. If they can beat Arkansas this week, they've got a chance to be 5-3, possibly a ranked opponent or just on the fringes there of the top 25. It's a Missouri team that they're not wowing anyone with what they do offensively, but they've got some good defensive players. Nick Bolton's an all-SEC linebacker. I think that could be a really nice little end-of-season test where, yeah, Missouri might make you earn it a little bit, but that's a game where you can get real confidence and say, hey, we went out and beat a real opponent that weekend.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You actually mentioned this to me off the air yesterday, and I think you're right about that, that Missouri is all of a sudden now separating itself from these other also-rans that Georgia's playing right now. And I'm certainly hopeful, and I'm anticipating that Georgia will get a chance to play that game. And I do think it's a much better measuring stick for Georgia at the end of the season than we initially thought that it might be. Let me just kind of squeeze in one more thing while I still got you here, Connor. And that's on the subject of some of the young players who got a chance to play. I know you had a chance to ask Kirby Smart about Jalen Carter yesterday. Carter is continuing to flash for me. I believe he had a blocked PAT. He also, was in on a big pass pressure at one point in time. Mm-hmm. Arian Smith catches a touchdown in this game. I thought Saturday was a nice day for exactly what UGA fans wanted to be. Showcase some of this young talent. And some of that was on the offensive line near the end of the game, some of them a little bit more young than others. But the point is, Georgia was playing a lot of bodies in the fourth quarter of this game on Saturday, and I love to get my binoculars out and see who's coming in the game. And obviously, in the case of Arian Smith, you don't need binoculars to notice him necessarily. Mm-hmm. But it was a nice day to see young guys really get in the mix as Georgia continues to lay that foundation for what might be a better 2021.
Yeah, Kirby Smart said afterwards, this is really the first time all year they've gotten a chance to really put in those young guys at the end of a game where the result hasn't been in doubt and sort of get them those key game reps. Because I think the thing that hurts Georgia the most when they lost those sort of those cupcake patsy games, and yes, I am including Georgia Tech in that this year, I think that you lose the chance to get those guys early game reps to get their feet wet. Devontae Smith, yeah, he made the game-winning touchdown catch his freshman year in the national championship game. But he had played in blowouts, and Tua Tagovailoa even that year was getting significant reps in the later stages of games in blowouts. And I think there's a real value to that. As far as Jalen Carter, he's in a separate category to himself. I'd say he's probably had the best freshman year, just given, Kenny Milton couldn't stay on the field. Marcus Roseman, Jack Sane couldn't stay on the field. Carter has been probably the most consistent from game one to, I guess, game eight now. And Saturday I was home with my parents. We were watching the game with them. My dad's a very casual Georgia football fan. It was very, very obvious to him that Jalen Carter is a player and is going to be a very good player for Georgia in the years to come.
Yeah, it's fun to think about. We, on this show, gosh knows, we've hyped up 9,000 of these guys over the course of the years. But in Carter's case, he really does have a very nice look to him, for sure. I will squeeze this in also before we let you go. But you had a very interesting piece up with JT Daniels. We've now seen Daniels for 2 weeks. What happened against South Carolina was less spectacular than what happened against Mississippi State. But kind of in a weird way, I'm now more sure that Daniels is the entrenched starter than I may have been against a very specific kind of opponent, Mississippi State, that was playing a very specific kind of defense that obviously he just feasted on and exploited. He was not perfect against South Carolina on Saturday, but he was plenty solid. And you see the things that he's doing really well right now. You see a couple of things that maybe you kind of, want to see him work on. But overall, Daniels is real. He's the real starter. He's I think entrenching himself. And it just seems like that, once again, to look ahead to 2021, with the way that Daniels is doing things right now, it's setting up Georgia to have a very sensible conversation in the offseason. With Daniels, the veteran, as you're almost certainly starter to begin the year at the very least, if not for the entirety of the year, and a five-star backup like what Bryce Young has been at Alabama, like what DJ Uiagalelei started out as being at Clemson. Just Georgia kind of having a normal quarterback offseason would be such a welcome change. And, you know, what I saw from Daniels on Saturday made me more likely to believe that's true.
Yeah, there are some things I think would agree that he could clean up. There's some touch passes that, you know, specifically the two to Jermaine Burton could have led to bigger plays and more points for him, more sort of style points. But he's doing all the little things right now. And there's not sort of that no longer he's dropping back to pass or holding your breath. It's you're waiting to see who's wide open on the other side and who he's going to fit it into. Even his interception, I thought he was a little bit unlucky and actually made a pretty good throw there to Kyarius Jackson. And just, you know, ball got dislodged and the defensive back for South Carolina, Jamie Robinson, made a great play on it. I don't know how much we're going to learn from Vanderbilt this week because, again, this is just a very bad football team. But sort of looking ahead of that Missouri game, that's another chance. And then the potential bowl game, those are the two games for me where I think, especially because they're later on, those bowl practices, I don't know how many they're going to have, but they'll be huge for him and sort of go back to like a spring training type of thing. That'll be a really interesting chance for us to see how much better Daniels can continue to get as he gets more game reps.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun to think about. Connor, thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Enjoy reading more from you at DogNation.com the days ahead. And, of course, getting a chance to chat with you again here very soon, too.
Yep, as always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, great stuff from Connor Riley there. We'll transition here into our SEC Through on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG here today. And, of course, on Tuesdays on our program, that means our MyBookie Best Bets, as we take a look at the other big games from the SEC here this week. Connor mentioned a moment ago the big spread for Georgia against Vanderbilt, 35.5. Is what that stands at right now. We'll kind of run through some of these spreads and big games here as part of our MyBookie Best Bets on our SEC Through here right now. Georgia's a 35.5 point favorite against Vanderbilt on Saturday. Another chance for Georgia to maybe kind of get some style points together and just find a way, as I said to Connor, big margin of victory against South Carolina. Georgia has not done a lot of that in SEC play in recent years. Consecutive weeks of going more than 30-plus points against SEC opponents, a chance to add another week to that, kind of putting Georgia back in the same offensive frame of mind that it was in back in 2018, was really doing that with the regularity, scoring basically, you know, 35-plus points against every SEC opponent it played that year. Even against a very overmatched Commodore squad, that's something that Georgia has a chance to do on Saturday. There are a few other games around the SEC that I'm very interested in. Texas A&M is at Auburn. Auburn has covered in 10 of its last 12 home games. And they are 7-point underdogs against Texas A&M on Saturday. Aggies took some criticism for how they performed against LSU, winning the game, but not necessarily an offensive thing of beauty and maybe not necessarily the style points that you thought a number 5 team in the country was supposed to have. We talked about that on the show yesterday. Auburn also reeling after the Iron Bowl. We've never seen this before. Auburn playing a regular season game after the Iron Bowl, playing a game at home here after having lost the game that matters to them more than any other, but not causing or allowing your season to go into a total tailspin could be something worth watching here for Auburn on Saturday. They have typically been good at home, but do they have any energy left? And for Texas A&M, this is kind of what counts as one of the last remaining impressive wins they can get this season. I think this A&M Auburn game is actually really pretty fascinating, especially just given the fact that we're kind of, you know, that the needle that kind of moves one way or another, the needle is kind of moving back in the direction of Auburn fans criticizing Gus Malzahn again. This is a pretty fascinating game. Arkansas and Missouri are going to try to get back after this Saturday after Arkansas had some issues. Last week, I think Connor's preview of this was 100% correct. But right now, Missouri does not look like a bad team. They've won some games. Most of that has been at home. That's where this game will be for the Tigers upcoming Saturday. And by the way, that's where Georgia will have to travel to close out the regular season on either the 12th or the 19th in Columbia. Missouri's done pretty good things at home here this year. We'll see if they can continue that against Arkansas. If the magic for the Sam Pittman debut season comes to an end, and it's Eli Drinkwitz who takes some of that attention for himself, this is pretty fascinating, sitting at what could be a better than you initially thought game for Georgia-Missouri to close out the year. Tennessee hosts Florida as 17-point favorites. You know the backstory here. The Vols have lost 5 consecutive games, all by more than double digits. Florida the last couple of weeks has, you know, eventually won comfortably, although games against Kentucky and Vanderbilt at times maybe a little closer than they should have been. This is obviously a game, though, that will be kind of more about the Jeremy Pruitt hot seat situation. Does he play well enough to quiet some of that talk down in Knoxville? It certainly seems like there's a lot of worn-out welcome stuff starting to go down with Pruitt there in Tennessee. So pay close attention to that. Kentucky at South Carolina. That's a home game for the Wildcats. They're 11.5-point favorites. I don't have a ton to say about this game one way or another. However, I do think there's a chance that even though Kentucky's the better team, between Doty and the running game situation that South Carolina's put on display, the better skill position players might actually be on the side of the Gamecocks here, even though Shai Smith's not going to be playing. I've liked what I've seen from Luke Doty at quarterback the last couple of weeks. I thought he had some moments against Georgia, showed a little bit when he got a chance to play against Missouri. I think South Carolina may have a little bit of a future with Doty, so it may be worth watching. LSU will host Alabama on Saturday. This is the game that kind of got moved around, shifted around. Some folks thought LSU may not want to play this game. There was initial discussion the game may be flat out canceled. It will take place on Saturday. As we told you yesterday, LSU will not have Terrace Marshall, former five-star wide receiver. He's opted out the rest of the season. Alabama can probably make this blowout as bad as they want it to be, given some of the things that went down with last year's game, including Ed Orgeron's post-game comments. Wonder how badly Alabama does want to beat LSU, how motivated they are to go hang a huge number on the road on Saturday. We may find that out. Outside the SEC, only one game involving top 25 competition. It's Wisconsin hosting Indiana. Badgers 14.5-point favorite. This number is way up because, as you may be aware, the Indiana quarterback Michael Penix Jr. is injured now and is going to miss the rest of the season. So a very disappointing injury for him. And that kind of brings to a close his season. This game's probably also worth watching from the standpoint that there's a very good chance that Ohio State does not make the Big Ten title game because their game against Michigan State's kind of hanging by a string. Who knows what happens after that? More missed games from Ohio State would make them ineligible for the conference title game by virtue of the rules that the Big Ten just kind of invented on the fly a couple of weeks ago. So it could be that Ohio State's forced to play a game on December 19th against someone other than, we presume it's Northwestern. I guess it is Northwestern. I think they've clinched in the Big Ten title game. And Wisconsin's the most high-profile team potentially available there. So if you're a Buckeyes fan, you're probably rooting for Wisconsin here as a way of setting up a big December the 19th matchup to maybe preserve some chance for Ohio State making the college football playoff. That we'll talk more about the playoff scenario here in a moment. For now, though, that's our MyBookie best bets. Make sure you check out my friends at MyBookie. And it's winning season at MyBookie, and you have a chance to be a winner even before you place your first bet. You can get a 50% deposit bonus. That means when you put $200 in your account, let's say, they're going to put $100 in there for you. Then after that, you play, you win, you get paid. But to take advantage of the big deposit bonus, you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. Use the promo code DOGNATION at MyBookie. You get the big deposit bonus, 50% added into your account when you first sign up. Then after that, you play, you win, you get paid. So just simply find MyBookie online, type it into your browser, MyBookie, promo code DOGNATION, get the big deposit bonus, and you're off and running after that for winning season with our friends there at MyBookie. All right. Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. In the time we have left, I want to turn our attention back to the scenario with the Georgia Bulldogs here for a moment and the college football playoff top 25 that will be released again tonight. Now, last week, one of the semi-controversial statements that the committee made was ranking Georgia at number 9. Some of you may have seen that. You may have seen the reaction to that. We even had some fun on our show last week with ludicrous Danny Cannell, professional troll that he is, some of the things that he said about Georgia. So we'll see if on the heels of a South Carolina blowout win, if Georgia's more comfortably entrenched in the eyes of some of the punditry where it's ranked tonight. We'll watch that, but we'll also see what happens above that. I talked before about Texas A&M and what may or may not have happened for them in their win against LSU. Does that open the door for Florida to move past Texas A&M tonight's rankings? Does Florida slide up at that number 5 spot? My guess is probably not, but I'm also, you know, never going to, you know, put it past the committee to do almost anything. I do think, though, that Ohio State becomes possibly the most interesting team to discuss here. As we said before, Ohio State stands a very good chance of not making the Big Ten title game. And frankly, I don't think that's their biggest issue because, as I said before, if you're playing Wisconsin to end the season, that's a plenty high-profile game. In fact, I think most rank-and-file college football fans would view a win over Wisconsin as more impressive than a win over Northwestern, even though Northwestern beat Wisconsin head-to-head a couple of weeks ago. The issue for Ohio State is not the lack of a high-profile game to end the season. It's the fact that Ohio State may not get to play enough games leading up to that. after their game was canceled again this past Saturday. I told you before, the beginning of this season, I was more than fine with just rubber stamping teams like Ohio State and Clemson into the college football playoff as long as they won their games, because we're going to have to make an assumption or two in a weird year like this. And it was easy to assume that Ohio State was one of the four best teams. But now with Ohio State just not playing very much football, how do you rubber stamp a team into the playoff? It's just not getting a chance to show on the field how good they are. And even the presence of a Justin Fields, you know, one of the top couple draft picks in this upcoming NFL draft, is not enough to make that argument, because the committee has looked at another team who has a first round quarterback, BYU, and essentially given them no chance to make the college football playoff, which essentially mutes the argument a little bit for Ohio State because of Fields, when, you know, the quarterback situation at BYU has been completely ignored here. I think the committee is facing a very tough situation. There are teams like Notre Dame who are making their job a little easier. I think the Irish, as much as I don't like them, validated themselves this past Friday, going to North Carolina, taking what was a close game, making it an easier win. I think you give the Irish some credit for that, but there aren't a lot of teams other than Notre Dame and, you know, possibly Alabama, who are making the decision easy for the committee. Teams like Ohio State are just not getting to play a lot of football. And when they did play a high-profile game against a pretty good team like Indiana, the game was closer than the experts thought it should be. So the drama should be pretty good tonight when the committee announces, but ultimately we could be heading towards a situation where the committee ultimately is faced with a pretty unsatisfying verdict when it finally all comes down. All right, we'll get ready to wrap up here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. I will tell you this as we get ready to sign off. First of all, Eddie is on his way back here to the program. We're going to be giving you a lot more details about that in the days to come, as Dog Nation Daily's mascot, Eddie the Blind Squirrel, is about to make his triumphant return to our show, and we're going to be introducing a brand new Gator Hater segment. I cannot wait to tell you more about that in the days to come. But also, speaking of upcoming days, keep your eye on the Georgia recruiting scene. Some very interesting developments. I know four-star defensive back Terrion Arnold has sent it some sort of announcement today. We'll find out if that's a top three or whatever that is. But Arnold, I believe, is going to be active on social media today. Also, some interesting chatter as of late with Nyland Green, as that situation seems to be going down to the wire. Xavier Sorey has given you his top three, which does include Georgia, as to be expected. But a real battle there brewing for the Dogs. Some of those big names still on the board for this class of 2021 are getting close to at least giving us more details on the decision they're about to make. And then ultimately, as we head towards the early signing period, actually making those decisions. Jeff Sintel is going to be all over that on the pages of DogNation.com and here on our show again very soon, too. So for Arnold and Sorey and Mason Smith and Corey Foreman, the big names left to decide, let's watch closely to see how that goes down over the course of the next couple of days. The time for finding out is almost here. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Thanks for tolerating a slightly different show as we're here in the confines of my home for right now. And we'll look forward to speaking to you back here again tomorrow.